Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello, and welcome to an hour of Mind Power. This is Donna Sebo, and we have a very special guest today. We're going to be talking with him in just a moment, but I wanted to put out a quote first. And this quote is, "Begin doing what you want to do now. We are not living in eternity. We have only this moment, sparkling like a star in our hand and melting like a snowflake. Let us use it before it is too late." The reason I use the quote that I used is because my guest, Thomas Luckenbill, is a man who has put together quite an interesting and phenomenal publication. It's titled Staying Awake, A True Story of Life in Death. If you've lost a loved one, or if you wonder what kind of experiences people have ever gone through, Thomas has been brave enough to be able to write his personal story, and it's involving his mother. Thomas Luckenbill, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Donna, for having me.
You are a man that has quite an interesting background. You've been a professional horse trainer for over 25 years. You really have a passion for this. You have worked with these animals, some of them being very, very difficult, and some of them have ended up being champions. You have won many world championship titles. You've worked with clients and their horses. You have a very strong sense of family. You are in California, and you have been since the experience of your mother's death and the story we're going to be sharing with my listeners today. You are talking to a lot of people about the other side of life.
Yes,
and
I am.
That takes guts. Because there's not many people that can stand up in front of the audience and be willing to just say, hey, folks, I've had an experience. I experienced something with a member of my family that was so deep and so profound. I'm going to tell you the story, and I want you to know you're not alone and that you don't have to be afraid of death, the experience, and then you proceed to tell your story. Thomas, what kind of a response have you been getting from people sharing your story?
Donna, I have had the most amazing response so far. The experience with my mother happened back in 2004. It feels like yesterday. And I wrote this book because as a young child, I feared death. I almost lost my mother the first time around when I was 11. She had encephalitis and TB meningitis combined. She went into a coma for 7 months. She did come out of it. So death was knocking at my door when I was 11. She did recuperate, and 2 years later, I lost my father. So at 13, I lost my first parent. So death, I want to say, haunted me.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I had this experience back in 2004, it was so profound that I knew that this gift that I was given, I want to say from God, because he's the only one who could have gifted me with this experience, I knew right then and there I had to write this book. And the first person who emailed me 90 days ago, I read the email and I broke down in tears because she said I had changed her life. I've been training horses for 25 years. I thought my purpose on earth was to train horses, which I love animals. The connection that you can get with an animal can just be so profound.
Mm-hmm.
So knowing I was supposed to train horses, I thought, the rest of my life, I was okay with that. I was enjoying my life every day. And just from that one email, I now know, let me back up. From 2004, when this experience happened, I knew, wow, this is my purpose in life. It was such an eye-opening experience and now to get all these emails that are flowing in and people saying to me that don't know me that I've changed their life, it couldn't be a better feeling, because I'm releasing fear in this book of people's, I want to call it the unknown, because really it is an unknown. Where do we really go when we pass away? A lot of people question death. A lot of people want answers. I wanted answers as a child, and I never got them. And so,
you know, Thomas, in reading your book, I knew immediately that you were a medium. And that may not be a term that you would want to apply, but having been in the work of mind for so many years of my life, it is so comfortable and pleasurable for me to be able to recognize people's talents. When you were a little kid, you were having experiences. You had voices.
Yes.
Now, a lot of people would say, gee, as soon as they say that, this guy has to be schizophrenic. No. You're
yes.
not. You're normal. You're healthy. What people don't realize that get too much in the left brain side is that there's a communication factor that goes on that sometimes children are able to tap into because they haven't learned they're not supposed to do it. They don't
Absolutely.
Know it's not possible.
Absolutely.
But you talk in your book right at the very beginning how you've had extraordinary experiences all of your life, and one of them was about your father, and he appeared to you. Tell us what happened there. How old were you when that happened?
I was 13, and my father died in January of 78, and it was probably first part of March. I was sitting in the farmhouse in North Dakota. I grew up in North Dakota on a ranch, and I was sitting in the kitchen alone, and with seven siblings and myself, we had a very large kitchen, and we had a hallway off to the right side of the kitchen, and I was sitting quietly by myself, and I saw a figure of a man walking down the hallway. There was no one in the house but me. My mother had went to town for the day, and watching this figure come down the hallway, I then recognized him as my father. Well, my father had passed away 2 months earlier, and I saw him go into the living room, and in my mind, I said, is this something I'm truly seeing? So I sat in that chair in the kitchen for a moment and said, you know what? I'm sure you just miss your father. I was trying to find excuses to tell myself that didn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like, I'm sure you just miss your father so much, your imagination is running wild. Well, a few seconds later, I thought, no, I believe he's in the living room. I got up from the kitchen table. I wandered to the hallway. I looked over to the right into the living room, and sitting on his favorite black recliner was my father. I stood there in amazement. I was probably 30 feet from him. He was looking straight ahead. I didn't know at that point, at 13 years old, I could have went over and started to communicate with him because I was in such shock, because this was the first time I had seen someone who had crossed over, passed away, whatever you want to call it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I sat there in such amazement, and yet I knew this was nothing that was abnormal for me, because it was so real. I could have went over and touched him, yet I didn't, because this was the first experience of seeing someone who had passed away. And I would say it was about 45 seconds later, he stood up from his chair and he wandered 30 feet through our living room, and he vanished into thin air.
Mm-hmm.
I never told anyone, Donna, about this experience, not even my mother, just for the fact that my mother was still recuperating after having encephalitis and TB meningitis combined. I didn't want to upset her. I didn't want to upset my siblings. Yet I knew what had happened to me, and I thought, I don't want anyone to think that, you know, people would think, oh, you're crazy, that didn't happen to you. This just cannot be. So I just kept it within myself, and I was so grateful that day that he showed up, that I got to see him again, that my whole world changed from that moment forward, and I never, ever closed my mind to anything that I want to call is abnormal that happens to people. I've always, always stayed awake, and that's why the title is the book, Staying Awake, because I've always stayed awake to what the universe or God or whoever we want to talk about is trying to share with us. So it was an experience that changed my life forever.
Now, your father came back again. You saw him again, and he made a comment to you that everything
yes,
was going to be all right. And you had a roommate at that time that was another young man, and you were older, obviously, and you were very concerned. And your roommate, wanted to know if he had sat on your bed during the night. And he said no, and you said okay. And this was a dream experience that you had. And I think it's important that this is shared, because so many people are so unaware of the fact that this is much more common in happenings with individuals than we realize. And we, if we try to communicate with many different individuals and say, oh, well, you're nuttier than a fruitcake. You need to go and spend some time in a mental institution because you're seeing things. No, this is not a hallucination. I myself had an experience with my own father who came back, it was 3 years after he had died. And he came back with information, one, letting me know that he was happy, and two, that I was to clean things up with bills that had not been accounted for, and it was just a phenomenal experience. So I can totally relate to what you're going through. But you've also had other experiences, and before we talk about your mom, I think it's important for people to understand that you have paid attention to these various happenings.
Yes,
and one of them was related to your to a horse. It was a gelding.
Yes.
That you went in, you saw, and when you were looking at this horse, it was like there was a video backdrop that was put behind him. Tell us about that.
Yes. This was the first time this actually happened to me. I was around 26 years old. I was looking for a horse for a client. We traveled into the state of Colorado to look for a horse. And the horse that we flew in to look at wasn't quite what the customer and I wanted. So we just started driving down country roads, and I would see a ranch off to the side, and I'd say, let's go in here and see if there's any horses for sale. Well, we wandered onto this ranch, and lo and behold, it was someone that I actually knew, but I didn't know that was her ranch. We wandered in. I had asked the ranch owner, do you have any horses for sale? She says, yeah, we actually do. And so she took me into the barn. And she had just got done working this buckskin gelding. Buckskin is a color of this gelding. And she had just got done working them. So to cool him off, they, like all trainers do, we just put them back in their stall. But if they're a little wet, we tie them to the wall, like with a 3-foot rope, so they don't lay down and get stuck on the wall. Well, he was tied to the wall, and she directed me to the stall that he was at. And so I went down toward the end of the barn, and I walked up to the stall door. And when I opened the stall door up, this gelding turned his head. Now, granted, he was still tied to the wall by about 3 feet rope, 3 foot rope, and he turned around and he looked at me, and it was like, and this is all I can explain it by, it's like a movie screen moved behind him, and I saw this huge, what I want to call a photo backdrop of a world championship sign, and I kept looking, and it stayed there, and it lingered behind him for the longest time, and I kept looking. And I looking, and I went, oh, this is my first world champion gelding that I'm going to win my first world title on. I looked over at the owner who was looking for a horse, and I said, this is the horse we have to buy. And he's like, well, would you like to take it for a test ride? And I'm like, I don't need to. Now, I couldn't explain to him what just happened because, again, it would probably sound a little crazy to this man. So I just said, I just know, trust me, this horse and I will connect. And there is something that I just know this will be a world champion for you. He's like, you have to take it for a test ride. I said, Roger, I don't need to take it. And he insisted, so I laughed inside because I thought, well, if I were the customer, I'd probably feel the same way. I mean, how do you know what the animal's going to perform like if you don't ride them and test them? So, of course, I took him out for a few moments, rode him around. He was awesome. We bought the horse 9 months later with very hard work. I spent hours and hours and hours training this animal. And it's not like I just took him home and went to a world show. I spent 9 months, sometimes 3 to 4 hours a day, preparing this horse for 7 different events. We went to the World Championships in Topeka, Kansas. Not only did I win 2 world titles, I won 3 reserve world titles and also reserve all-around horse and rider. That horse won me 2 world titles. Why that day when I looked at him, this World Championship backdrop showed up behind him, I don't need to try to figure it out. It happened. I saw it. I recognized it. And I said to myself, if you believe in this animal and you believe in yourself and you go through the bumps in the training that you're going to have, because an animal's an animal. They have a mind of their own, and sometimes you will have challenges getting them trained to do certain things. But if you believe in yourself enough and you believe in this animal enough, you will be a world champion. And I never let that photo backdrop leave my mind, and 9 months later, I was a world champion. How do you explain that? I don't need to have it explained to me because I just know what happens in my life, and I'm just so, so grateful for what keeps happening in my life.
I concur. You make a statement in your book that your parents, both of them were very, very special people, and they taught you the importance of integrity, keeping your word. They taught you that you could trust them. They taught you values of work, responsibility, and the love and care for animals, especially the horses, which obviously this is something you have lived. Now, your family is a very, very close-knit one, even though you're in different locales.
Yes.
When it came time for your mother to make her exit, she had, at a particular moment in the past, before she passed away, said that you were the one that was going to make sure that she wasn't going to be put on any kind of life support system.
Yes.
And she designated you over your siblings. And you had to go through some really strong challenges here because this was to be an experience that was absolutely unbelievable, not just for you, but also for your siblings, but especially for you. Now, your mom was letting everybody know the year before she passed that she was ready to go. How did she do that with the family?
Why?
No, how did she do that?
How did she do that? She called us each individually, and I don't know the conversation she had with my siblings, but I remember very distinctly a year before she had her stroke, she called me, and we talked once every week or 2 weeks, and she called me one day, and she said, she always called me Tommy, and she says, Tommy, I need to talk to you about something. And I said, sure, Mom, what's up? And she said, well, I want to talk to you about a couple things today. She says, and some of your siblings are having a real challenge with it, but I really need you to pay attention to what I'm going to be asking you. And I said, no problem. And so she says, well, first of all, she says, I want you to promise me. You need to listen. I want you to promise me. And I said, Mom, I'm totally paying attention. She says, if you ever have proof that I will never walk or talk, get up on my own, feed myself, she says, please, whatever you do, don't leave me on life support. I said, Mother, I would never, ever do that for you, do that to you. I said, I wouldn't do that. I said, I totally understand. I will go by your wishes. I said, but please put in a living will and trust that, you know, do not resuscitate, all that. I said, because I heard her, and yet I being so naive, not knowing that we also would have to sign the paperwork and tell the doctor when, that threw me for a loop. I had no clue that that was going to happen. So the year prior, I said, yes, Mother, that's not a problem. I promise you. What is the other thing you want to chat with me about? She's like, well, I want to tell you what I've been praying for. And I said, now, Mom, you do know prayers do get answered. And she's like, yes. And I said, okay, so what have you been praying for? And she's like, well, I've been praying to die before I turn 80. And I said, you know, Mom, I'm not in your body. You were so ill back in 76. I said, I can't judge what you're saying at this point. I said, because it is your body you're living in. She was very arthritic by the time she was, in her early 70s because of being paralyzed when she was 52. And her body was just tired. She says, Tommy, I'm just tired. And she says, I've been praying every night to die before I turn 80. Now, your siblings are having a really hard time with it. I said, Mom, it's okay. I said, those are your wishes. And I said, as much as I will miss you in the physical world when that time comes, I said, I love you so unconditionally. I said that it's okay. I said, those are your prayers. And I said, I'm okay with it. And we never spoke of it again. We never talked about it again. She never had to remind me, and we talked for the next 10 months, and then that phone call came March of 2004 that she had a severe, severe stroke at my sister's home in Minnesota. She would go down from North Dakota into Minnesota for, usually around 6 weeks in the wintertime just to get out of the farmhouse because she was alone since my father passed away. Mm-hmm. And she lived alone, and she just went and stayed with four of her daughters through the winter months. And I got a phone call from my youngest sister that Mom had a stroke, and they were taking her to the Alexandria Hospital. But when she got there, they had to fly her to Rochester, Minnesota, because it was more than that hospital could handle. So, 10 months after we had the conversation, and it was literally 6 weeks before she turned 80.
Now, when you were going through this and your mom was in the hospital and you knew her wishes, this was quite an emotional situation because everyone in the family said, you have to be the strong one. And they knew that Mom had made you the designated individual that was going to tell the doctors when to let go of the life support system. But you went through some experiences, and one of those experiences was you became paralyzed yourself. Tell us what happened.
Yes, it was the fifth day in, and we had decided to remove the life support because the CAT scan showed that there was absolutely no way that she was ever going to walk or talk again, and yet she could look at us every day, and so the guilt that started to set in that morning when I told the doctors to, you know, remove the life support at noon was more than, I can't even really put it in words to where it probably makes sense to people, but the guilt that I was feeling, and I hope this doesn't sound bad, but I was feeling guilty that I was basically, and I apologize for how this may sound, but I was killing my own mother because mm-hmm. I was taking away life support that was keeping her here. And yet she made me promise to not leave her on the life support. So the guilt that was inside of me was more than I could handle. And I remember after they removed the life support, I just had to go to the hospital or to the hotel and get some rest because for 5 days I hadn't slept a wink. I was just back and forth in her room and in the waiting rooms and talking to the family and so on. And so I wandered over to the hotel, and I'm going to jump a little bit, my sisters were coming, a couple of them were outside. We all kind of met in between the hospital and the hotel. We sat down for a few minutes on the lawn. I just said, girls, I've got to go over and get some rest in the hotel because I'm feeling exhausted. And I thought my body was just giving out because I was so mentally and physically exhausted. Well, mm-hmm. we got back up off the lawn, and we went to walk to the hotel to get me checked into another room because I wanted a separate room from all of the room or the room that we were all sharing. And so halfway between the hotel and the hospital, we're walking toward the hotel. My sister Sandy was on my left side, Barb and Tanya, which is Tanya is Barb's daughter. They were on my right side, and we were all just walking together, and all of a sudden my legs completely gave way. I had to grab for my sister Sandy. She grabbed me around the waist and held me up, and then Barb got on one side. I had each sister on each side of me. I had my arms around their body, and they literally had to drag me. I had no feeling from my waist down, and they had to drag me into the hotel. We got up to the elevator doors, and being propped up to the elevator doors, I said, girls, I'm fine. The feeling's back. I'm just so exhausted, and that's all I thought it was. And the elevator doors opened. I stepped into the elevator. Well, I didn't even step into it. I took one step forward, and I fell completely on my face. My legs were no way, shape, or form working. Long story short, I ended up in the emergency room. Doctors and nurses came in. They were trying to get feeling in my leg. They did come back later. My legs did come back. And I wandered out of the emergency room. I got back over to the hotel. I'm jumping quite quickly because of what happened in the hotel next was the most profound thing of one of the two things that happened that day. Is I got to the hotel room. I did walk up to the room with my sisters. I laid down on the bed. I laid down for just a split second, and this paralyzed feeling came over my legs again, and I thought, no, that just didn't happen. I'm going to get up and use the restroom. I'm going to be fine. And I went to get up. There was no way my legs were working, and I thought, okay, just lay here. You're okay. This is all fine. And when I had laid down, for some odd reason, I had crossed my arms over my chest, and as I'm laying there, knowing I couldn't get up, my arms became extremely heavy to where they felt like they were crushing my body, and I couldn't breathe anymore. And I asked my sisters to remove my arms, and when they uncrossed them, they said they felt like lead weight just hitting the bed. And when my arms fell onto the bed, the paralyzation moved up through my body, and all I could move was my head and neck. I began to panic because I'm thinking, okay, this is not normal. And I'm in very physically good shape. I take care of myself. Mm-hmm. And I was in the best shape of my life when I turned 40. So I'm laying there totally paralyzed. I could turn my head to the left and to the right like my mother could do up in that bed. And I began to, I want to say, have a little bit of a panic attack because it was a very, very scary feeling. You feel trapped. I felt extremely trapped. And all I can say is it felt like there was a hand of somebody just holding me to the bed. Like there was no way I was going to be able to get up. And in the height of my panic, I was like, okay, I'm going to be fine. And I was right there, and I was so scared. That's all the workout I can really, I was scared because I couldn't move. I couldn't get up. I could see my sisters. I could move my head and neck. And Donna, the next thing that happened, and this may sound silly, but this is the only way I can truly explain it. And I understand chakras a little now, which I didn't even know what a chakra was back then. It was like something, and this is the only way, I can explain it. It's like something opened the top of my head, and I felt this whoosh, and I heard my mother's voice not scream at me from anger, but to get my attention. She says, "Now, how do you like how that feels? You're carrying around all this guilt that you've removed this life support, and I'm laying up here completely paralyzed in a state that I talked to you about a year ago. Don't you ever, ever feel guilty about what you've done?" And I went, because of what I heard, I'm like, so I'm laying there still not being able to move. I looked over one of my sisters and I said, "Char," she was like, "What just happened to you?" And I said, "Call all my siblings right now and get them over here to the hotel." So they all come over. Four of them hadn't even heard what had happened to me at that point. And they all walk in, and I shared with them how the guilt had taken over my body and the hand of somebody was holding me down on this bed. So I understood how this felt to be paralyzed up in that bed. And I said, "I was feeling so guilty, you guys, that I was removing this life support from Mom, that I said I felt like someday not only my family members would hate me, but I just didn't know how I could live with myself when I went back to California." And they all were like, "Tommy, we would never make you feel that way. You know, you're the rock of the family. We, you know," and so as soon as I said, "No matter what happens in my life, nobody or no situation will ever make me feel guilty that I did what my mother wanted me to do," I felt this tingling in my toes, and I felt this tingling in my fingertips. I felt this energy move up my legs. It went up my arms, went through my chest. It settled in my torso, and a few seconds later, I went, "I think I can get up and walk." And with the help of my brother, I had to grab him around, you know, his shoulder to help me up. I walked to the restroom on my own. And this may sound silly, but as I was in the restroom, I thanked everyone I could think of. I thanked God. I thanked my mother. I thanked the universe. I thanked anyone out there that was in charge of gifting me with this, because the guilt was gone. Was mm-hmm. totally gone out of my body, and I thought that was the message I was supposed to get until what happened the next morning. So, yes, well, I was paralyzed, totally, like my mother.
That's right. Your mother did it. Now, this
yes.
is something that many times people have a difficult... It's very difficult to be able to comprehend something like this, because you're not going to be able to produce it in a test tube, and
right.
it is very personal, and your book... Staying Awake, A True Story of Life in Death, and there is more to this story, which is just incredible. Thomas, I know we're coming close to the end
yes.
of our time together here. I really want to compliment you on writing your story and being able to put it in such a special way, because I think that you really have created a gift here with anyone who is listening today. If you've not had an experience like this, or perhaps you have kept it to yourself because you didn't want anybody to think you were, you know, part of Looney Tunes special. Look, these are very personal experiences.
Yep.
No one that has ever gone through something like this ever forgets it. You don't.
No. Oh,
you
no.
never
it
forget
it. It feels like yesterday, and it was 7.5 years ago.
Right. So here you are putting this together, and there is so much more to this story, and
yes.
the special effects that entered into your life with your mother's passing, how it affected all of the family. And I just want to quote something out of your book. You said, "We live our lives in search of fulfillment when we have it already. We are looking in the wrong places. It isn't that our pursuits are wrong. They are just experiences. But somehow when we get to this place in time, we forget where we came from, who we truly are." And I think that that is so true. I think sometimes life is about living, so we rediscover that.
Yeah.
And I think, Thomas, your book about your mom, and I don't want to tell the rest of the story because I want people to get your book. I think it's a type of book that you want to take with you if you're going on a trip. If you in any way have had experiences of your own, you'll find a kindred soul in Thomas Luckenbill. And, Thomas, what is your website that people can go to find out more about you and this fabulous book that you've put together?
My website is www.thomasluckenbill.com. Thomas Luckenbill is spelled T-H-O-M-A-S, Luckenbill, L-U-K-E-N-B-I-L-L.
Well, Thomas, I wish you the best. His website, thomasluckenbill.com, L-U-K-E-N-B-I-L-L is the correct spelling of his last name. Do check it out. And if you know of anyone that perhaps is going through a difficult time because maybe someone in their family is getting ready to make their exit, and sometimes we carry guilt that is just absolutely unnecessary. Thomas, a story I think would touch anybody's heart and mind. And it makes you aware of the fact that life is a rich experience, and it's going to have a lot of different sets of stage for one level or another. And when you go through certain experiences, it changes your life forever, as it has changed Thomas's. Thomas, thank you so much for being my guest today. Your book, Staying Awake, A True Story of Life and Death, is a book that should be in everybody's library. I think it's marvelous.
Donna, thank you so, so much. I cannot express to you the gratitude I have for having me on today. Thank you so much.
It has been a joy. We're going to be taking a break. Again, check out his website, thomasluckenbill.com. Donna Sebo here. We're taking a break. We're going to be back in just a moment.
You have children between the ages of 3 to 10. Do you love children's books and collect them? Then you'll want to know about God's Kiss, the award-winning illustrated children's book that has been enjoyed by families around the world. 15 beautiful illustrations by Pacific Northwest artist Ed Gedrose accompany this lovely story about a little boy named Johnny that will capture your heart and mind in a very special way. Multicultural and non-denominational in content, it will become a family favorite that you and your children will want to read again and again. This book is available by itself through Amazon, or if you contact me, Donna Sebo, directly, you can get a personalized signed copy. There is also a talking book. You can order the talking book CD by contacting me via email, donna@delphiinternational.com, or by calling 253-582-5604. You can also visit my website, delphiinternational.com, to see more details. God's Kiss is a family classic that belongs in everyone's library. Get your copy now.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature, however, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Hi, this is Donna. Telephone lines are now open, and if you'd like for me to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight, well, give me a buzz at 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008, and all I need is your first name or initial. Let me tell you what I perceive, and then you can ask me a question about anything that you like. So that's 888-627-6008. I got a cute poem by a person that is just a delight. Her name is Kayla Howard. And Kayla has been involved with physical fitness for a lot of years, and she came up with this poem that I thought was so cute, and I wanted to share it with you today. And this is how it starts. It's titled, I Shall Not. But I don't want to, my inner child screams. I don't care about your grown-up dreams. Child, we're grown now, and tantrums are not charming. Please stop this behavior. That is exceptionally alarming. I shall not, I will not, I want to sleep in. Sleeping in will not ever make you thin. I'd rather watch TV or Facebook, my friends. I beg you to look through a big girl lens. A similar discourse I'm sure you've had within yourself at odds, you'll find the good and the bad. On the one hand, you know what needs to be done. On the other, you really just want to have fun. The desire for reward without paying the expense is embedded deeper in people than true common sense. Although it's public knowledge to receive gain, there is pain. We'd all like to see results without any strain. Remember today, you always have a choice. Will you listen to the responsible or the lazy girl's voice? Sleep in, think it's too hard or pretend you don't have time, or just squeeze in 15 minutes of fitness to see your mood climb. I thought that was cute, so I wanted to share that with you today. How many of us do that? We just, I really don't want to do it. What is it with us? We have these attitudes about keeping fit and exercise. We think we have to kill ourselves. You don't have to. Find something that works for you, that gives you that energy that you need. It really does make a difference. I am constantly amazed at how physically, when I'm sitting and watching television, if I'm sitting with family and I'm going there and all of a sudden I'm ready to doze off and I go, what in the world is wrong with me? I have to get up and I have to move. And as soon as I'm moving, now I've got the energy back. It really makes a big difference. So take care of yourselves. Make sure you are going to feel good about who you are. And it's not just diet. You know, we have gotten to a patterning, so many of us. We're either in front of the computer or we're in front of a television set. We don't get up and move. And I recall a story. It was on television. This was years ago, and it was about a farmer, and he was in his 80s. And this guy had been a farmer for years and years and years, and as a farmer, he had to be up early before the chickens and take care of all of his animals and be out and had to plow the ground so that he could take care of the crops, doing all the things that a farmer has to do. Well, he had done that for all of his life. In his 70s, in his late 70s, he decided he was going to retire. He deserved being able to take it easy. He had members of family that took over his farm, so things were going pretty good without him. And all of a sudden, he starts having an ache in his back. His knees begin to bother him. He's going, rarely did he ever go to the doctor, unless there was an accident or something. Very rarely. He didn't have time to go to the doctor. He was too busy. So he finds himself sitting in a doctor's office. Tells the doctors about these aches and these pains. And his doctor looked at him, and he was close to 80 at the time, and he said, for heaven's sakes, you're close to 80 years of age. What do you expect? You're an old man. The aches and pains come with age. So he found that he was sitting in a rocking chair on the front porch of his home, and that pain just kept getting worse. He couldn't help but get up early every morning. He had done it for so many years. And he happened to look out from his porch onto an area of land. Now, he lived in a part of the country in the United States where the community that he was so attached to didn't have a whole bunch of money. And things needed to be done relative to the roads. Well, they were only able to do so much. And he saw a section of land that a road needed to be put through. It was close to his farm, but he talked to people in town. They said, we just can't do it. And he said, well, you know what? Would you mind if I do a little bit of something? They said, no, go right ahead. We can't do anything. We can't afford it. If you feel like you want to do something here with the building of this road, go ahead and do it. We don't mind. So once he found out that it was okay with everybody, he started getting up real early in the morning, 4:30, 5 o'clock, got his breakfast, took some of his hand tools out, and started cutting up dead trees and brush. He did it for a few hours, would go back to the house, get something to eat, turn around, go back out. Amazingly, he found that he wasn't suffering from aches and pains anymore. He didn't need to go see the doctor. He gave up his medicines, and he started building the road. When this story was shared on the program that I saw many years ago, the farmer said, I have been so busy being productive and living my life. He said, for some reason, I bought into this idea that when I got older, that's where I was supposed to be. I was just supposed to be sitting on the front porch of life and not worry about anything. And he said, I really don't have to worry about money. That's not my issue. But he said, something needed to be done, and I'm a working man. So he started working on the road. Now, this area of land that he was working on had all kinds of debris. And the young reporter that was interviewing him took his camera out and showed all of this stuff that the old man had worked through and said, you've got so much stuff you're going to have to go through. Doesn't it overwhelm you? And the old man said, no, I just take one step at a time and I cut away what I want to cut away and what I'm able to take care of. And once in a while, I'll call in my neighbors and they bring over a piece of equipment and maybe we move something. But he said, I'm not in a hurry. The road needs to be built. And you know what? He said, I feel so much better because I'm doing something. And what the moral of the story is you must have purpose. People have this idea that if you were a gazillionaire, you'd never have problems. Well, believe me, all you have to do is watch some of these reports on television and the stock market this and the stock market that. You can get absolutely paranoid with fear when you have, tremendous abundance. You have to be a good custodian in life. So whether you have a little bit of money or whether you have a massive amount of money, it's what are you going to do with your life and how are you going to be able to feel productive and valued as an individual? Well, you could be like the farmer and maybe help a community to achieve something that maybe economically they're not able to do. There are a lot of environments right now because of the economy in this country where people just don't have a lot of money to work with. So, okay, give a little bit of your time. Volunteer. I was talking with someone just yesterday who was working with me on a project, and their passion is animals. And we were discussing how this woman could go and get involved in some level of animal husbandry. And to volunteer with a vet or the Humane Society or whatever's going on. You're needed wherever you are, whatever you're doing, whatever your skills are. If you feel as if your life doesn't have a purpose, get out of the attitude. Get out of the pity pot. Clean yourself up, dust yourself off, and get out someplace and say, hey, I'm here. I'm ready to volunteer. That's what built Habitat for Humanity. One man started that idea. So many times it just takes someone stepping up to the plate of action saying, I'd like to donate a certain amount of time. This is what I want to do. Not only is it going to give you an incentive, gets you out of focusing on yourself and what you don't have and focusing on what you can contribute, and so that puts you in an environment where someone may find out, gee whiz, you're really skilled at this. I know somebody that really could use you as a part of their team, and you might be able to find a job. But more than anything else, if you participate in something that really speaks to your heart and to your mind, you are never, ever going to feel like your life has no value. And I have seen this happen so many times with people. You need to remember that as an individual, you're unique, you're special. And there are certain things that you can do that maybe nobody else is going to be able to do. But more than anything, if you're true to yourself, you're going to find that you'll be guided and directed to that venue that is going to enable you to become empowered financially, as well as emotionally, spiritually, and physically, feeling better. Remember, the farmer that I saw that story about was 80 years old. The best of my knowledge, and he's probably 250 by now, I don't know. I'm not that old. But anyhow, regardless, he said, I have something that gives me purpose. I like doing it. I'm going to do it. It's going to benefit everybody. And it did. That road, whether or not it was completed, is not the purpose. It was the story. It was the essence. He got up out of his rocking chair. And you can have a mental rocking chair that keeps you stuck. So get up and out of the rocking chair, get the show on the road, and get moving in life, because it makes a difference. This is Donna Siebel. We're going to be taking a break here for just a minute. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 888-627-6008. Donna Siebel here. We'll be right back.
Do you have children between the ages of 3 to 10? Do you love children's books and collect them? Then you'll want to know about God's Kiss, the award-winning illustrated children's book that has been enjoyed by families around the world. 15 beautiful illustrations by Pacific Northwest artist Ed Gedros accompany this lovely story about a little boy named Johnny that will capture your heart and mind in a very special way. Multicultural and non-denominational in content, it will become a family favorite that you and your children will want to read again and again. This book is available by itself through Amazon, or if you contact me, Donna Siebel, directly, you can get a personalized signed copy. There is also a talking book. You can order the talking book CD by contacting me via email, donna@delphiinternational.com, or by calling 253-582-5604. You can also visit my website, delphiinternational.com, to see more details. God's Kiss is a family classic that belongs in everyone's library. Get your copy now.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Siebel to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, this is Donna. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 888-627-6008. Okay, for those of you in the state of Washington, tomorrow is the first day for the Renaissance Fair. Oh, I am so excited. I get to wear pretty costumes, but more than anything else, I was out on site yesterday, and it is absolutely awesome. You have got a layout here, activities coming in that are just marvelous. This is a family event. I hope you'll come out. I hope you'll come by and say hello to me. I have the booth. It's got the gigantic yellow banners with huge red lions on them. This is an event. You make sure you wear good walking shoes. And if it's as warm as we expect it to be, wear a hat. Carry something that's going to shield you from the sunshine. For some reason, it didn't show up today. I don't know. We've got to have a conversation with our sun god here in the state of Washington. But regardless, the gates open at 10 a.m. in the morning. The event is open until 6 in the evening, both this Saturday and Sunday. It is marvelous. I hope you'll come by. I'm going to be doing many sessions with people, but also I'm going to have little angels. I've got handmade angels that are going to be on display, and also I've got a plethora of books. So I hope you'll come by, say hello. I'm really looking forward to doing this. And just remember, if you want to wear a costume, any kind of costume goes. That's one of the elements that makes this event so spectacular. People dress up their children, their dogs, their cats, their iguanas, birds. I'm not kidding. We have it's magical. It's absolutely magical once you walk through the gates. So this is the Washington Midsummer Renaissance Fair. It's this weekend, the 6th and 7th, 13th and 14th, and then the 20th and 21st. This is absolutely a huge event here in the state of Washington. So I do encourage you to go to their website, go to the WashingtonMidsummerRenaissanceFair.com. You'll be able to find out more information about it. You'll get directions. It's so easy to find. But it's a fabulous summer experience. Donna Sebo here. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 888-627-6008. I wanted to share a couple of thoughts with you. And this is something that I found quite interesting, that when people do research, and this is all over the world, they will come up with different points of information. These are a couple. Brazilian scientists have found that proteins in banana peels bind with copper and lead in contaminated water. And they are finding that it's an inexpensive, reliable ingredient for filtration systems. Now, if you were to take a banana peel, just peel it off the banana, try to put water through it, it's not going to work very well. But what they're discovering is a complexity that of the composition that enables things to be filtered. People are working on all kinds of stuff, so it'll be interesting to see what they come up with. Now, this is out of Popular Science. Also, if you have a pond and you want to clean it, you can take the lift-like mesh of recycled plastic and add soil and seeds and float it, and the plants will clean the pond. There is a lake that we had the opportunity to visit that's here in Spanaway, Washington, and they have lilies that float on the water, and it helps to keep the water clean. It's absolutely marvelous. There is a company, Floating Island International, that sold more than 4,000 of these rafts, and what happens is nutrients can't get into the pond, and other scums are eliminated because of the plants. They do a wonderful job of recycling, and it helps to restore the ecosystem. So there's all kinds of things that they are learning that have been around for a long, long time, but now we're having to really thoughtfully apply what has been forgotten. And in many areas in our environment, we have ignored certain things. We just said, that doesn't make any sense, so we're not going to use it. Well, we're finding that we need to pay more attention to how Mother Nature does her job so we can do it more effectively. And if you've wondered if ever there's going to be a problem with toilet paper, well, I guess there is going to be one, because apparently sources for softer bathroom tissue are getting fewer and farther between. And chemists, believe it or not, have been employed to try to figure this out. Well, just keep in mind, when they're talking about this stuff, there was a day, and it wasn't all that long ago, when people were using catalogs for toilet paper. Ouch. Well, that's the way it goes. And also, pay attention when you buy chocolate. And if you're a fan of chocolate like I am, and I have found this to be the case, have you noticed when you go to the store, you will find that items are in smaller packages. They're charging the same amount of money, but you're getting less for your money. I've noticed this at warehouse stores. I've seen it in so many different places. Well, cocoa, the price of cocoa is sky high. So candy makers are adding air, just like ice cream makers have added air. They say the chocolate is creamier with fewer calories, and that is something that they sell. That's fine. But understand, they are trying to make their products still taste good, but you've got less of the real stuff in it. So be sure you check it out. But cocoa is becoming very expensive. However, there are people that are determining areas in the world where cocoa can be grown, or maybe it hasn't been before, just like coffee beans and so many other things. We have to become innovative. It really is important, and we can do it so that it's healthy, it's positive, and going to benefit the planet on so many ways. Check out different types of thinking. It's good. I'm so glad there are people out there asking questions, exploring, because that's what it's all about. We never know it all, ever. This is Donna Sebo. I hope you will have an absolutely awesome weekend. If you're coming out to the Renaissance Fair in Washington, stop by, say hello. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Thomas, who was my guest today, was talking about some very personal experiences. If you've had some, believe that you are experiencing them, because there's something special in your life that is trying to communicate with you about something bigger and better. Life is full of mysteries. Isn't it wonderful? Have a fabulous weekend. I'll talk with you on Monday. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.